Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Back in, Gabe Kuncho, 92.9 FM ESPN, and joining me now is Associate Executive Director of the AutoZone Liberty Bowl, Harold Grainer, on X at Harold Grainer. Harold, how was your weekend?
I had a pretty good weekend.
Sure.
Was in Tuscaloosa for the Alabama-Oklahoma game, obviously following the Tigers. Great disappointment there. But a lot to talk about coming out of the weekend. Interesting weekend, especially in the SEC. I know we'll get to that, but boy, oh boy. Gabe, how about our Tigers?
Yeah, well, real quick, though, you know, even outside of the Tigers, really tough weekend for Memphis sports. Oh. I mean, about as brutal as I can remember.
Let me tell you, walking out of the forum last night, I looked at some folks, I said, thank goodness for Brooks Monahan women's soccer team.
Right.
And while we're on that, Brooks, ladies, congratulations. I know you'll represent us well in Fort Worth this week. Playing TCU. Good luck to the Tigers in the NCAA.
They still haven't lost this year, so that's a good thing. Fact that they got a 7 seed, though, still bothers me.
Yeah, oh yeah.
How do you end the year number 3 in the country and end up with a 7 seed with no losses on your resume?
They got hosed.
It's just how it all works out. But I did get to call a championship game this week, and I was down in Senatobia, in beautiful Senatobia, Mississippi, watching Northwest Mississippi handle 16-13 was the final score. Mississippi Gulf Coast.
Saw some future big time D1 players. A guy named
Jaquan Morris, cornerback, USC commit. We had a couple of wide receivers who are going to be. I think one's committed to West Virginia. Keon Hutchins on the Northwest Mississippi side. Other side, 4-3 guy, and I think his name's Tyler Henderson from Mississippi Gulf Coast. He might commit to ECU. I think ECU is probably his best offer, but he's got some Liberty, those types of offers in there. But it's always fun. Good talent in that conference.
Yeah, that's fun. And we often forget about what's happening down there, but it's high-level football at that level. I mean, championship football.
For sure. All right. Now, I guess I'm done deflecting at this point.
Yeah, let's get to it.
Tigers lose to ECU. They play for a field goal, it felt like. In the final 5 minutes of that game, they get the field goal. But then with about a minute and a half left, they let ECU come right down the field and score about a 40-yard touchdown through the air to take the lead. 31-27 was the final score. Sitting here at 8-3. Navy to end the year. Navy just beat South Florida. That's going to be a tough game to win, even at home. I wonder what the crowd's going to look like. Probably not near what it was for, you know, South Florida and Tulane. I can tell you that much.
Could have been, would have been.
But
yeah,
I found myself over the weekend having these conversations with fans about good enough versus bad. And I think there's a distinction there. But, like, what do you see when you watch this team, and what do you think ultimately is going to happen by the end of this season? And, you know, the feelings around Ryan, the feelings around this program, where do you think they're at from the general part of the fan base that shows up and follows this team?
Well, one thing I know about this team, because this is the way Ryan is, the staff is they're going to fight. They're not going to give up. And that's one admirable piece of this football team that I think is still there. They have not let go of the rope, I don't think. Now, as a Tiger fan, I'm frustrated, as we all are, because you look at where we were just a couple of weeks ago. You lost to Birmingham. You came home and got the much-needed, exciting, thrilling, compelling, last-minute win over South Florida. Everything was back.
Yep.
Everything was back. And the table was set. That first CFP poll came out. The Tigers were the group of five leader. They were in the bracket to play in the CFP. It was all there. All you had to do was finish. Finish strong, win out, and they're in the playoff. That is not what's happened. Two straight losses. This loss, of course, you know, going into Greenville to play East Carolina is never easy. Never has been, never will be. They have great fan support, and they did what they had to do. At home, they got the win. But for the Tigers to be, what was it, minute and a half, 2.5 minutes or so? 2.5, I think it was, to go in the game.
Yeah.
They have the lead. All you got to do is stop East Carolina.
Yeah.
They go 75 yards and win
in 40 seconds. I mean, it was.
Yeah. In no time.
And you know what, Harold?
So that's the frustration point, Gabe. And the disappointing piece for me is this team had every goal and aspiration, expectation on some level in front of them. And they just haven't gotten it done. And that's disappointing and frustrating.
And I'm going to be completely honest. I mean, I maybe you didn't get to see the end of the game. I'm not totally sure. But I really didn't have a whole bunch of confidence that they were going to keep them out of the end zone in that situation. All you got to do is at least hold them to a field goal. Tied ball game, potentially get the ball back, go score, or go into overtime. But here comes a over-the-top, easy one-on-one catch in traffic, touchdown. It's just... It's very frustrating. I'm curious your thoughts when it comes to like the way that they've been deploying this offense, right? Because offensively, we know what they started the year as. Big run team, right? They were putting up about 300 yards per game. They've been throwing the ball a whole lot more lately. We saw a reemergence of Sutton Smith, but I did go back and look at it the last three games. Sutton Smith was the guy we really highlighted coming into the year. He's got 11 carries the last three games. It's kind of strange to see how they deploy him game to game. It's very inconsistent.
Well, not having seen the game, so I'm relying on the accounts in the media of the game for this. I do wonder about Belus, the quarterback.
Yeah.
Lewis. Wonder about his health.
Yeah.
I think he's still working through and – With the injury, is a whatever percentage Brendan Lewis, is that better than whoever you would put there at number two?
Right.
That's a question. The running game, you know, we go back to the preseason. We're told that Sutton Smith is healthy, and everybody's like, whew.
Yes.
Sigh of relief.
Yeah.
He's back. Man, that's great.
Because we really hadn't seen him since your game there a couple of years ago.
Yeah. And now this year we're to the end of the season, and where has Sutton Smith been?
Yeah,
where has the run game been? Just a question.
Yes, just a question.
Just a question. I go back to the defense in this game against East Carolina. Tigers are up at the half, 17-10. Total collapse by the defense in the second half. 21 points. That last drive puts East Carolina on top. So a lot of question marks here. So here we are. And again, we all want to talk about and debate the expectation game and what those are. I think with where this program was pre-Justin Fuente.
Yeah.
Saw what he did. Mike Norvell. The standard has risen, and rightfully so. And I don't think that is unrealistic.
Yep.
Ryan's won a lot of games, unfortunately hasn't gotten over that hump of being in the championship game. And I think that is a reasonable expectation for this football program and this fan base. And I know a lot of folks are frustrated. I was hearing it at the basketball game last night. You know, we want this football program to win and succeed at such a high level. We want it badly. We want it badly for Ryan and that staff. We want it for those players. We want it for our university. And when it doesn't work out, It's disappointing and frustrating. So here we are, all the expectations that were fresh and alive just a couple of weeks ago, that's all out the window.
Yep.
So with a game to go, the Tigers are sitting there with an 8-3 record,
4-3
in the conference. Let's say it in unison.
Yes.
So
that bothers me to
see. So here we are. Got to beat Navy, a Navy team that just beat South Florida, who's a pretty good football team.
Yes, absolutely.
So we're looking at the possibility
team that gassed you a year ago.
Yeah. So are you going to be 9-3 or 8-4? 5-3 in the conference or 4-4 in the conference? Light years away. So I'm hoping and expecting, Tiger, you got to figure it out. You got to beat Navy. You got to be 9-3, go to a bowl game, and get that 10th win.
Yep.
And to continue that streak, which is a big feather in their hat. Now, that doesn't dismiss the other frustrations and disappointments. And then when the season is over, you know, we know the reality of the world. And it's not just about this year and a disappointing season. But when the year is over, the AD sits down with the head coach and they do an evaluation. What is the state of our program? The head coach does the same thing with his staff, from himself all the way through the organization. What do we need to do to get better? And it'll be interesting to see what the answers to those questions are.
I talked to a lot of fans over the weekend.
And Gabe, I am not in the boat of it's time for a change with the head coach.
Of course.
I am not there.
I don't generally call for anybody's job. That's not my thing.
And again, that's not my role.
Sure.
I mean, I'm a fan. But, I'm a supporter. I'm not going to go there. They just got to figure it out.
I can say this, based on a lot of fan interactions I had this weekend.
Yeah.
I think at some point, fans are going to want some type of. This is just how it works sometimes. They want their pound of flesh. They want to see changes made.
Right.
They want to see something different. And I don't know what it's going to look like this offseason after the way this season has transpired.
And Gabe, on some level, that's reasonable. When you have a season as it has turned out for the Tigers, status quo probably is not acceptable, certainly by the fan base, but is that acceptable by the head coach and the administration? So we'll see. But Navy, they're going to come loaded for bear, folks.
Yep.
They're in first place. They're playing for a chance to play for the American Championship. They're 6-1 in the league. Then you have three at 5-1. Tulane, North Texas, East Carolina. So we'll see how that plays out. So they're coming. They're highly motivated. But here's an interesting thing. Just a little twist to all of this as I was putting my notes together. The American Championship game is December 5th.
Mm-hmm.
Navy does not play their last game of the season, the regular season, the Army-Navy game, until December 13th.
Yeah.
So Navy could be playing for the American Championship.
Yeah. And then
still a game to go.
Yeah,
interesting little twist to the quirks of all of those.
I don't
want to
get on my soapbox, you know, but this was one of the frustrations I had about when Army joined the conference and how they sort of scheduled and worked around both programs.
Yeah,
when it came to scheduling,
you know, it's just one of those. You got to set it to the side because there is nothing more special.
No, I get it.
Than that Army Navy game.
I understand.
And they want their own date, their own game, their own window.
But they're
on
conference
TV.
Mates and can never play conference game unless it's in the conference championship.
And another note on the calendar. Yes, the American Championship game is on the 5th. Selection Sunday for the bowl games, December 7th.
So you get
we'll
play the Army Navy game. Yeah,
just a little interesting twist.
It's
there.
Quirky. It's very quirky. All right, now also this weekend, A&M. How about that? 30-3 at half.
Whoa!
Against South Carolina, and South Carolina was pouring it on. Second half, they come out. I don't know what Mike Elko said. I can't imagine it was anything very nice at halftime, but they rattle off 28 unanswered points, win the ballgame 31-30. It became the largest comeback in program history, and this is my favorite stat of the weekend. First SEC team since 2004 to win after trailing by 27-plus points. So since 2004, teams that trail by 27-plus in an SEC football game were 0 and 286. They are now 1 in 286. Marcel Reed was phenomenal in the second half, and I thought that defense stood up phenomenally in the second half. It was just great execution in the second half. Not so much in the first. For
not so much in the first. You know, kudos to A&M. They showed why they have the record they have, the ranking that they have, why they are a legitimate national championship contender. You talked about the quarterback. Heck of a player.
Yep. 439 yards passing. It's pretty good.
That's a pretty good day.
Yeah.
Pretty good day. Three TDs, you mentioned that. I go to the other side.
Sure.
To the Shane Beamer South Carolina piece, because I think the world of Shane, he's done a really good job there. And I looked at his record since coming to South Carolina. His first year was 2021. They went 6-6 in the regular season, won the bowl game, finished 7-6.
7-6.
2022, 8-5 finished, lost the Gator Bowl. 23, took a step back, 5-7. Last year, they go 9-4, lost the Citrus Bowl. So they went 9-3 in the regular season in 2024. So there were reasonable expectations for this South Carolina football team. And up until now, it's like, holy cow, they're 3-7 after the ball
started the year number 11 in the preseason AP poll.
So obviously, the season has not gone as they had hoped and expected. So they're 3-7 with two to go. And when you lose a game like that, that's when the folks with the fire sticks and the pitchforks come out for you.
Yeah.
But with the record that and as ugly and as just mystifying as it is, you look at Shane's record there, you know, the knee-jerk reaction, oh, we got to fire the coach. I don't think they're anywhere close to that. I don't think. Again, based on the record and the level of success he has had at South Carolina. They got two games to go. You know, are they going to finish 3-9, 4-8, 5-7? We'll see.
Yeah.
Not a good day in Columbia, South Carolina.
I will say this. I don't know if they'll fire him because of the previous success, although this season has really spiraled and been very, very ugly. But I have had this thought process throughout the year. And I know that Virginia Tech and James Franklin seem to be in cahoots. Yeah. They seem to enjoy each other's company. But
something might
there's
happen
no official,
this week.
No official hire made.
Yeah.
You know, with some one of these open jobs, could he restart his clock somewhere? Because that's, you know, has he maxed out with what he had at South Carolina the past couple of years? Or, you know, that's something I have been paying attention to the entire year. Could he restart his clock? He seems to like South Carolina, but liking South Carolina and winning three games, that's I don't know if those will continue to go hand in hand.
But going 3-something or 4-something, that takes the glow off
for a
potential move somewhere else, I would think.
Okay.
I would think.
Well, South Carolina before he got there was not in great shape.
No. He's done a heck of a job there.
Yeah, but you know, a bit of a Sam Pittman experience in a way, early in the Arkansas days. Is that a good sort of comparison? Maybe. I don't know. I'm doing this off the top of my head, so bear with me.
Yeah,
bear with me. All right, next thing, Alabama loses to Oklahoma. You were there. What'd you see?
Oh wow, I saw an incredibly talented Oklahoma defense. And an Alabama team that unraveled. The Oklahoma defense forced three turnovers, including a pick six. Scored 17 points off those three turnovers. Alabama was I would I know the fans were stunned.
Sure.
On some level, just a really good college football game.
Yeah.
A lot on the line. But Oklahoma, you know, we talk about Oklahoma and Brent Venables always. That's always the conversation. You knew Mateer going into the year was going to be a factor. Obviously, he got injured. But now, Mateer looking pretty good. But I go to the defense, and that was the real talk post-game.
Sure.
Listening to the post-game show and just the conversations is a really impressive Oklahoma defense. And Alabama, yeah. It hurts, but they're still there. They're still there. They're 6-1 in the conference, 8-2 overall, one game to go. That's at Auburn. You win that one, you're in the playoff. But Oklahoma, you know, not a great year for them, but a couple of pretty good wins on the road. They beat Tennessee and Knoxville. They go to now the Tuscaloosa and win on the road. You know, they're 4-2 in the league, got two to go. Mizzou and LSU. We'll see. I don't think they make the playoff, but we'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see.
You know, some things can happen.
There's crazy things that can happen. Absolutely.
10-2 with their resume is not something that you just sort of scoff at and say they have no opportunity, but they have to handle business.
They got
to
finish.
But I will say this about Oklahoma's defense, and I'm glad you brought them up. I mean, when we talk about groups that truly lift up their entire team, and this is since John Mateer's injury, because he has not played the same. They only accounted for, 212 yards of total offense to Alabama's 406. But that defense, they had a score against Tennessee that ultimately lifted them over top, score against Bama that ultimately lifted them over top. They just find ways, that defense, to will their team to wins. And it's so impressive. And they won the takeaway battle 3-0. And they picked off Ty Simpson for the first time since the Florida State game. He had not, I mean, he's gone through a schedule that features Georgia, Vandy, Mizzou, Tennessee, hadn't thrown a pick to any of those SEC teams, and Oklahoma figures out a way to get in his head on the road.
And that's kind of one of the trademarks of that Oklahoma defense. You know, they force turnovers.
How about this stat, by the way?
And then they take advantage of them. The offense takes advantage of them.
I was just looking back at this and looking at the past 2 years and sort of – because, like, previous to the past 2 or 3 years, there wasn't as much cannibalization, right, at the top of the conference.
Yeah.
But it has been cannibalizing itself. In the past 2 years, OU is 0-2 versus Texas. Texas, though, 0-3 versus Georgia. Georgia then turns around. They're 0-2 versus Bama. But now Bama is 0-2 versus OU. I mean, it's insane. Like these teams are so good, but they have that one team in conference that is always going to be a thorn in their side. Yeah.
Well, I will go back to a comment. I think it was last season that Billy Glasscock, the GM at Ole Miss, made this statement a year ago at the Memphis Touchdown Club. He looked out into the audience, looked at the fans.
Right.
And said, get used to your team losing.
Yep.
The days of going undefeated.
That stinks to hear, though,
rolling through a schedule. He said, those days are over. And all of that was in the context of NIL and transfer portal. And by golly, he nailed it.
Nostradamus.
He nailed it. So, for a program like Alabama that is used to rolling through folks, no pun intended, and the dominant programs in the SEC, whether it's Georgia or any of the other names you mentioned, it's a new day. What is success has had to be recalibrated.
Right.
And going forward, folks – going to a 9-game conference schedule where half the league is going to take on another L,
right?
You're really going to have to, as a fan, get your head wrapped around, you know, the days of these gaudy records are over. Which, to go back to now to Texas A&M, undefeated.
Yes.
really tells you how special what they're doing is in the new world that we're in. So I went around the block to make a point.
But, you did.
But again, a couple of points there. Undefeated seasons probably aren't going to happen. And when they do, you got a special football
team. And we're going to talk about a 9-3, a potential 9-3 team. Not a 9-3 team right now. A potential 9-3 team that I think a lot of people, you know, nationally have issue with if they even have a chance. Like if they, even on the outside looking into the college football playoff, Texas shouldn't be able to get in there. Well, let me tell you this. With what you just said, 9-game conference slate, 16 potential teams in the next college iteration of the college football playoff, get used to 9-3 SEC teams being in a college football playoff going forward. It may happen this year. We'll see.
And that's but, their, and that's that after last season, that was the SEC's point.
Right.
You know, we play the toughest schedule week in, week out, more so than anybody in the country.
It is true.
And don't just count the losses. Look at who we played.
Yep.
Week in, week out, who did we play? And that's a that's tough to argue.
Yeah, my only problem is, you know, I think last year was strange because Bama was arguing, hey, we played a hard schedule, but you lost to the probably easier teams on you. You lost to a 6-6 Oklahoma team and a Vandy team. And then for Ole Miss, it was Kentucky. You know, you lost that game.
Yeah.
So, you know, I still think we need to take who you lost to into consideration going into the future and not just say, your strength of schedule was top five and you went 9-3.
You beat me to the punch because I agree with that point. You absolutely have to.
Yeah. All right, now Texas. Let's start on the Georgia side actually real quick. That's what we've been expecting from Georgia.
Yes.
I think this entire year in SEC play, 35-10, on a sneaky onside kick after a touchdown drive. I mean, it was well coached. The offense, defense, special teams, well executed. And that was, in my opinion, like the marquee Georgia win of the year, even though they've had some good ones on their resume so far.
Yeah. Couple of points there, just specific to this game. Big fourth quarter, 21-0, Georgia. And here's the thing, my takeaway from that game, couple of them. One, the biggest is the mentality at Georgia. They got up, but they didn't let off the gas.
Yep.
And you spoke about the onside kick.
Yep.
You know, when that happened, or the score that happened before that, more ball game.
Yeah.
Did they relax?
No.
Did they let off the gas? No. We're going to zing you with an onside kick, and we're going to keep going. And that's what...
It's a good mentality to have at this time of the year, by the way.
Absolutely. And I look at that, when I saw that and heard some conversation about that, I jump back to, not to go way back in this conversation, but I go back to what our Tigers are doing and do they have that mentality?
Yeah.
You know? But Georgia, impressive. Gunnar Stockton, really good ball game for him. Go to the other side of that quarterback matchup with Arch, 27-43, 251, a touchdown and a pick. You know, Texas sitting there now at 7-3, 4-2 in the conference, two games to go, Arkansas and Texas A&M. You know, last week they were number 10 in the CFP poll. Probably will drop this week, and rightfully so. If you look back at last week's poll, right behind them, Oklahoma was 11. They'll jump. BYU was 12. They beat TCU this week. They'll probably jump. So where does Texas land? Are they going to be there at 12?
I don't know. After this was a butt whipping by the end of it. So I wonder what the committee does with that. I was talking about the last three games. I said if they go 2-1 and beat a top five team, they'll probably get in. But you know, I didn't take into consideration they'd get their butt whooped by one of those top five teams to start the whole thing. So we'll see how that all looks out. But I just want to point something out about Gunnar Stockton.
Yeah.
His three top-ranked games of the year. Now, granted, he lost one of them to Alabama, and the whole team lost. But in the Texas game, Ole Miss game, and the Bama game, he has a combined 9 touchdowns to 1 interception. I'm not saying that I think like he's the runaway Heisman from a statistic standpoint.
Right.
But when we look for Heisman moments and we look for guys that step up in big games, I think there's an absolutely an argument for Gunnar Stockton being the best big game quarterback so far in the college football season. Now, we'll see what Julian Sayin says about that by the time he plays in the Big Ten title game and all that. I just wanted to point that out. Like, this Gunnar Stockton thing, there's some legs to it. I heard Kirk Herbstreit talking about it. Now, final thing, and we don't have to spend too much time because, you know, I think your information is as good as mine, is as good as Lane's in his head right now. But Lane Kiffin.
Lane Kiffin.
He refuses, and he keeps saying, I don't talk about these things during the year, which – sure.
That's why he has an agent.
But
a guy that we all know.
But at the same time, he refuses to, you know, ease the minds of Ole Miss fans. And Ole Miss fans' minds go one place when you don't want to ease their minds. It's that you're going to Florida.
Gabe, I have been saying this for over a month. And I still believe it. And I'm going to believe it until reality says something else. He said it Saturday. I love what we're doing here at Ole Miss, right?
Yeah.
I've talked about the family dynamic.
Right.
When that's going good and it's in the best place in his life, you got to think. He seems very content and happy down there. He's winning at a high level, has a legitimate opportunity to play for the national championship at Ole Miss this season. They're 10-1. 10-1.
And that was an unbelievable atmosphere.
With one to go.
This Saturday, that atmosphere was awesome for them.
I will say that I think he's, on some level, enjoying all of the clamor, even though he doesn't want to talk about
it. Sure.
That's why he has Jimmy to do that stuff.
Yes.
But all he has to do is say,
I'm staying.
I'm staying. That's all he's got to do.
We're out of Wolf of Wall Street.
Are they
I'm
still,
not effing leaving.
Because are they still trying to maneuver Ole Miss? Because, again, my position has been he's happy. He's winning at a high level. He'll get some more money out of Ole Miss. He's in Oxford for a long time. But he won't say the magic words, which is, I'm staying.
Yeah. Makes you think, doesn't it? Makes your head spin a little bit.
I still believe he's there.
Okay.
At the end of the day. Now, I do think that my friend Scott Strickland, the AD at Florida, I do think they will offer that job and make Lane Kiffin say no to the gazillion dollars everybody is expecting Florida to put out there.
But here's the thing when it comes to coaching contracts, strictly coaching contracts from the institution. I think Ole Miss will do whatever they can to match any number.
Absolutely.
That they see.
Absolutely.
So, like, I don't know how much actual coaching contracts matter really in this day and age, unless you're taking that step from Group of Five to Power Four. Like, that's the only difference. But when you're taking, if it was SEC to SEC, you're getting the same amount of money. It's just about how much money's behind the scenes.
Yeah.
How much power do you have within this athletic department to make the moves that you deem necessary? You know, those are the bigger things, in my opinion, than coaching contracts. So, like, I think it would be a bad idea for Florida to just say, hey, we're going to offer you $15 million a year and make you say no. You got to give him something else to chew on if you're offering him that gig. That's just my opinion in this day and age. I don't think money is the end-all be-all like it used to, like it once was. But, Harold, I appreciate it. Great.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Stuff as always.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Gabe. Have a great week.
Yes, sir. He is the Associate Executive Director of the AutoZone Liberty Bowl, Harold Grader, on X at Harold Grader. Now, we need to go ahead and transition from here. right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show. We will get to the Blitz next. 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Now, the biggest stories.
Overloading the line.
A bull rush of info. It's Gabe's Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM, ESPN, Memphis' sports station.
All right, Gabe. Virginia Tech has hired James Franklin after his ouster from Penn State earlier this season. He carries a 128-60 record with 5 AP top 10 finishes in his stops at Vanderbilt and Penn State.
If you've been paying attention to the coaching carousel and all the rumors and reports, you knew that this was probably going to happen. I think it's a really good hire by Virginia Tech. I'll get to my one question here at the end, but the reasons that I think that this is a good hire, one, he is a stability coach. Yeah, he couldn't win the big game at Penn State. He's never shown that he can win the big game as a head football coach at the FBS level, at the Power 4 level. But at the same time, if it's not COVID and it's not the first 2 years on campus at a place, the guy wins 8-plus games a year. And him in the ACC against what that conference looks like right this second, I think he can have a lot of success at Virginia Tech. And what they're looking for more than anything is stability. They haven't found it since Frank Beamer. All Frank Beamer was stability. He was a guy who didn't necessarily win those massive games at the end of the year, but he always had them in them. He won with special teams. He won by getting buy-in and culture from his players, and I think James Franklin can do the same. You know, contrary to the Brian Kelly firing, when Brian Kelly was fired from LSU, what did all the players say? Couldn't stand the guy. If you're not doing anything for him, he just sort of throws you to the side. James Franklin was a complete opposite. Every single player that played from Penn State seemed to step up and say, I hate this decision. I understand it's a zero-sum game. I understand that you have to win to keep your job, especially with all the expectations that were attached to his name in 2025 here at Penn State. But at the same time, all of his players seem to like him. He can recruit well. He's going to build a culture. He's going to win ball games at Virginia Tech. Now, I think my one concern is a little more abstract. I don't get the sense that James Franklin has lost his hunger to win ball games and be the best coach he could possibly be. He's not old. He's not 60, 70 years old. He's still got a long runway at Virginia Tech if he so chooses. But what I have noticed with guys that have that hunger, start at a place like Vanderbilt, build their careers up to get a premier job like Penn State, then they get fired from it. Sometimes when they have to take that step back down, the hunger's not the same. It's just not. You were younger then. You didn't know what you didn't know. You're not jaded at that point. You know, but there's a lot of examples of coaches like that having to take a step down, and they just don't have the same success. I think one that I can remember from my days at the University of Memphis is Tommy Tuberville. When Tommy Tuberville, by the end of his career, now you can have your opinion on Tommy Tuberville as a coach and in his heyday and what he is now. That's not the point I'm trying to make. But Tommy Tuberville had a lot of success in the SEC, ultimately ended up at Cincinnati. And you know what I saw from him when he was at Cincinnati? A guy who was collecting a check. A guy who just did not do the extra work to make that thing work, even though everybody before him at Cincinnati had made that thing work. So I that's my only concern, but I don't necessarily get that vibe from James Franklin. This could be, and it depends on Lane Kiffin. Right? Lane Kiffin would be wherever. Like, if he's at LSU, if he stays at Ole Miss, if he ends up at Florida, I think that's the best hire in the entire carousel that I can at least foresee. But if Lane Kiffin were to stay at Ole Miss, I think this is probably going to age as the best hire in this entire carousel as we start to sort of get down there, see how it works out, and the years pass.
Yeah, I totally agree. My first thought when I saw this was, oh, that's going to be the best hire of this cycle, unless Lane Kiffin decides to go somewhere. And I just don't know how much confidence I have in him leaving. To be honest, we've talked about it many times.
We talked about it a bit earlier.
Yeah, I don't really understand why he would leave Ole Miss at this point, but...
It's getting testy. It's getting testy in Oxford. And like I said earlier, I understand. I completely understand. It would be annoying to... You know, every single week, it feels like you're getting trolled by your head coach. Talking about the good old days on social media. We're living the good old days. Well, when you talk about the good old days, that means the good old days pass eventually.
Right.
So are you saying you're going to leave when you say, like, I...
Usually that's a reflection
it's
term.
It's this fourth or fifth grade trolling of what seems to be his own fan base that even is rubbing me the wrong way. And if people know me, I'm not a big fan of Ole Miss fans. I'm not a big fan of that fan base. I'm not a big fan of that program. But I do feel for them in the sense that they want some clarity, some understanding. You know, you can sit here and say Lane Kiffin has given them everything they wanted and asked for and more. But they've also done their side booster standpoint, from an athletic department standpoint. They've given everything he's asked for. So, like, I think there should be some mutual respect enough to provide clarity to the people you've been working with for the past 5-6 years.
To be honest, the main reason I want him to stay at Ole Miss is it means Florida doesn't get him, and I don't want to see Florida thriving.
What about LSU? If he ended up,
if he went to LSU, I'd be fine with it.
Okay,
yeah, I'd be fine with it. Okay. LSU's LSU.
Yeah,
you know.
But in the end of the day, I think if Lane Kiffin stays at Ole Miss and he does not end up elsewhere, I think this James Franklin hired at Virginia Tech,
totally agree,
is, I mean, A plus. I think it's a great hire at a great time for them, and it'll provide stability and culture that they haven't had since Beamer.
It's a home run. If you're a Virginia Tech fan today, you're doing backflips. You could not have asked for a better coach to come to Virginia Tech.
But again, the one concern that you can have is guy reaches his peak, gets knocked from that peak.
Sure.
Does he have the same hunger to thrive and move forward as he once did when he was a younger coach at Vanderbilt?
Shedeur Sanders got his first look at a regular season game for the Browns against the Ravens. He came in relief for Dylan Gabriel, who was in concussion protocol. He was 4 of 16, 47 yards, 1 interception, and a 13.5 passer rating.
Okay, you certainly can't take anything good from that. So if you're one that's trying to take something good from it, don't. I also, you know, I took some bad away from it. He's holding on the ball too long.
Yeah.
Doesn't know how to maneuver the pocket.
No.
Takes too deep of drops. Doesn't help his offensive line very much. You know, that's something he's going to have to figure out. But, like, if you're trying to, like, define him by what he did in relief after not taking first-team reps the entire year, you know, I don't know what to tell you. Like, he played like a fifth-round rookie who has not seen first-team reps and played with the guys that he played with on Sunday. You know, that's how I feel. But if you want to take some bad, take some bad. I took away some as well. But I saw this. Do you know who Josina Anderson is?
I do.
She's a NFL insider. I think she's independent, or maybe she works for a smaller network at this point, but she used to work for CBS and ESPN. She was in rare form when Shedeur Sanders got in this game. She's a big Shedeur and Deion fan. But she called it the hashtag non-debut. The hashtag non-debut. Okay, there's that. But here we go. I'm going to go through these tweets. The first one. Shedeur Sanders, with hardly any first-team reps this season, throws a pick. Let's see. What else? Let's be clear. This is not an intentional Shedeur Sanders debut coached up with any first-team reps all season from Kevin Stefanski. Sanders is playing by default only due to a Dylan Gabriel concussion. And then she posted clips. And the clips and the captions were hilarious. This is my favorite one. Here's a look at this no first-team reps 25-yard chunk completion by Shedeur Sanders. Here's a look at this no first-team reps 25-yard chunk completion. She was in rare form. She was trying to insulate Shedeur from any criticism, but you're not going to insulate him from criticism.
I am very confused by the reaction to Shador's first appearance from his defenders. You and I are fans of Shedeur Sanders. We want him to be successful in the NFL.
Sure.
We've been rooting him on since he was in college. We can pull the tape. We probably have 2 full hours of talking about Shedeur Sanders over at least the last year. He was bad. What were the Browns supposed to do? Not play him because he didn't have first-team reps?
He's only one available behind Dylan Gabriel right now.
He wasn't getting first-team reps because he wasn't expected to play.
Yep.
And backup quarterbacks in practice don't get first-team reps because they're not expected to play. It's one of those things where you could tell the people, and listen, I didn't necessarily know that, but what I did is I sat there for a moment and listened and read people who have been in NFL locker rooms or been on a football team at a high level.
You don't give the second string quarterback first team reps.
No. So
unless it's the end of a period where you've agreed upon it and you do it normally.
So when people who were there, like friend of the show, Fajoco.
Yeah, Brain Fajoco.
Was in NFL locker rooms, when he is telling you, this isn't a conspiracy theory against Shedeur Sanders. They didn't have him doing first-team reps because he was a backup quarterback. Then listen to him. It's not a conspiracy.
I think two thoughts can exist at the same time. It's not a conspiracy theory where Kevin Stefanski is throwing him out there
Correct.
To see him play badly so he can castigate him and throw him aside.
Right.
What I think it is Kevin Stefanski probably did not agree with the pick, probably didn't like Shador that much during the draft. He's a backup. He's not really focusing on him too much in practice. And you see the results of that on Sunday when Dylan Gabriel's in concussion protocol. I don't think it's like an active like smear campaign trying to get him away from yeah. Kevin Stefanski. I think Kevin Stefanski is just treating it as if Dylan is my guy. I'm going to treat Dylan as if he's my guy. And Shador, he's sort of a backup thought. This happens constantly.
Totally agree.
In NFL locker rooms, college locker rooms for that matter. By the way, one more Josina Anderson tweet. She posted another clip. It was a 3rd-and-10 completion for a first down. Here was the against all odds 3rd-and-10 completion by Shador Sanders.
That's not helping.
No, absolutely not. And Shador talked about it.
Infantilizing Shador Sanders is not going to help his career.
Interesting?
It's silly.
Shador Sanders talked after the game about this, and he got that big round of applause when he got put into the game, right? This huge round of applause. And he made mention, I'm paraphrasing here a bit, but he goes, when you give me a intro like that and you don't cheer Dylan like that, it makes it seem as if I'm a distraction when I've done nothing.
So again, Shador says the right thing.
He's saying the right thing. But
when he actually says things.
But yeah, when you do things like this and you show favoritism to him from the outside looking in, it becomes a distraction. And Shador's trying to actively not be a distraction.
Yeah.
He's trying not to be, but his name, his aura, his personality seems to get in the way for a lot of people that follow the sport.
I just don't understand why we can't just tell the truth here. Because you said it. Shador didn't get first team reps. If Dylan Gabriel's in concussion protocol, he'll probably get them this week, which means he'll probably look better next week because he'll be more used to the players he is playing with. If we want, we can talk about how he didn't get first team reps as long as you're not using it as some conspiracy against him. It is the truth of what happened.
Normal.
But it is a normal thing that happened.
Yes.
It's one of the reasons he looked poor. But at the same time, his pocket presence wasn't very good. He hung on the ball too long and he couldn't read.
Guys,
he didn't have the right protection set up for himself.
Do you think when I was at the University of Memphis, do you think Jason Stewart was getting first team reps when Paxton was healthy at practice? Do you think that David Moore and Brady Davis were getting first team reps over Riley Ferguson when he was healthy? No! That's not how any of this works. It's normal. It's very normal. I think most people understand it. I think there's a very, very vocal, loud minority sort of screaming from the rooftops, this is some conspiracy theory, when it's not. It's just how these things shake out.
Yeah.
He's a fifth-round quarterback. Dylan Gabriel's a third-round quarterback. The Browns organization and Kevin Stefanski think higher of Dylan Gabriel than Shador Sanders, so Dylan Gabriel gets more opportunities. It happens at every level of football.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose.
So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Even in Pee Wee, for God's sakes, some high level Pee Wee programs treat their players that way. So, like, I don't know why this is such a big, loud discussion.
Well,
it's
not the end for Shador. Like I said,
right.
If Dylan Gabriel isn't able to go next week, he'll get reps and he'll probably look better because I think Shador Sanders has talent. In the preseason, he showed flashes of having real talent.
And he had some lessons that he could learn from that game.
Lessons, but he has things that he absolutely needs to work.
13 yeah. yards, please.
He has to work on some things. Well, and just set up the right protections for yourself, dude.
Well, yeah, but he drops to genuinely 12 or 13 yards.
Yeah.
I don't know. Trent Williams can't protect for a quarterback who's dropping to 13 yards. That's not how that works. But listen, it's not the end. It's also not a conspiracy.
Right.
Calm the hell down. That's my advice. Everybody relax. It's okay. It'll figure itself out. If he's good enough, he will find a way on the field somewhere. If he's not good enough, he won't be in the league for long. It's not that complicated. It's usually open and shut. But I get his name and his allure, his dad. I get that it creates a story unto itself. Now let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. And when we return, we will rewind right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.